The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Well, one thing the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson does not suffer is a lack of self-confidence. Today he had this to say in relation to his belief that EU leaders are going to allow Britain to scrap the Irish backstop.
Actually, if you look at the preparations the UK had made on by March the 29th, we were very far advanced and things then slipped back a bit, but we're very confident that by October the 31st, we will be ready. And that's the crucial thing. I think that's what people want. You know, people are very confident themselves that they can do it. I'm not pretending that there won't be bumps on the road. There will be. I said that on the steps of Downing Street. But if everybody puts their minds to it, I have absolutely no doubt that we can get ready. So I hope that they will compromise, that they have seen that the UK Parliament has three times rejected the withdrawal agreement, the backstop. It just doesn't work. It's not democratic. I hope that they will see fit to compromise. But in the meantime, we get ready to come out on October the 31st.
Oh, all the trigger phrases there, such as saying the backstop is not democratic, despite the fact that he was part of a cabinet which actually endorsed it when it was agreed with the European Union before it couldn't be got through the Houses of Parliament. This has all come up because of the Sunday Times yesterday had an extremely interesting story which said that Britain faces shortages of fuel, food and medicine, a three-month meltdown at its ports, as well as a hard border with Ireland in the event of a no-deal Brexit. This was a special document put together by its cabinet office under the codename Operation Yellowhammer. And there have been efforts today and yesterday to try and say that this was an old, out-of-date document and that it had been leaked by members of the previous cabinet. But everything indicates, well, that's just straightforward lies, that it's a very much up-to-date document. But it does raise so many questions for Ireland. And one of the first I want to put to Dan O'Brien, Chief Economist at the Institute of International and European Affairs. If Britain is going to face shortages of fuel, food and medicine and a three-month meltdown at its ports, given that we import so much material directly from Britain or via Britain, how are we going to be fixed?
Good afternoon, Matt. Yes, I think, unfortunately, one of the areas that we'll be most affected by is imports coming into the country. All of the focus tends to be on the producers, on exporters, but because we're much more import dependent as an economy than Britain is. If Britain has shortages, we're likely to have shortages too. Now, let's just say, before anyone panics, that it's not guaranteed that there will be shortages. But if we have a no deal, there's going to be a big change to the way trade, international trade works for Britain, for Ireland, for continental Europe. And it is likely that there will be at least some shortages of some things.
What sort of things? And what sort of stuff that is made in Britain and what sort of stuff that is imported via Britain that wouldn't perhaps be harder to get by sea or by air not coming through Britain?
Well, the thing we'd be most concerned about for shortages is food. So we import, half of our food imports come from the UK directly, are sourced there, and more come through it from the continent via the land bridge. So we're very much dependent, particularly things like flour and potatoes. You know, you might think that as an agricultural country that we produce those things, but we actually specialize very much in beef and dairy, and we import many different types of foodstuffs. So the concern is that if we have big blockages at our ports, big tailbacks, stuff getting hit with tariffs and new customs arrangements, that there will be, everything will be blocked up, and there's potential that we could have some shortages, including of the most basic things.
Katie Dawn is with us as well, Head of Brexit Policy at the British Irish Chamber of Commerce. Is there also a danger that simply things just won't be sold to us, that the British will stockpile things for themselves and decide not to sell things like food into Ireland?
Well, depending on what happens, I mean, businesses are going to do what they need to do to protect themselves and make themselves, or at least try to be viable in the short to medium term if there is a disaster of a no-deal exit. So there is the likelihood that some ingredients or some supplies might be harder to source. It's going to be the same in terms of exporters as well. You know, our Irish businesses will be looking at the same problems. The issue around stockpiling, especially with the new deadline, is that come October 31st, you're looking into the Christmas cycle in terms of warehouse space is already at a premium at that time of year, as everyone prepares for the big Christmas bonanza, which is always difficult to secure. So even in advance of March, trying to find warehouse space for stockpiling was already a challenge for a lot of businesses. When you add on to that the normal Christmas cycle and the stockpiling that would normally happen at that time of year in preparation, it becomes an even bigger challenge for businesses. So actually capacity to stockpile might be reduced compared to where it would have been ahead of the original deadline.
And you also mentioned exports, Katie. What about the situation whereby, I think it's at 14% of our exports now is all that goes to Britain, but aren't there certain sectors which are heavily dependent on Britain who don't really sell beyond Britain?
Well, I mean, if you look at the agri-food sector especially, that's probably our largest domestic sector that's reliant on the UK, especially around the beef sector. And that is going to be a huge challenge because within the agri-food sector, it's not just the implication of tariffs, which are higher than they are for other sectors. It's also then the non-tariff compliance is more expensive because you have all things around safety checks and regulatory compliance and everything. So that all adds a huge cost to doing business. So, and in other things like cheese, so cheddar, UK be our biggest market for cheddar cheese. They're not easily, cheddar is not something that can be easily sold on the continent because on the continent because the tastes are different. So there's a huge dynamic between the UK and Ireland on its trade due to similar tastes and business sentiment and everything else.
Before I go to our third guest, I want to go back to Dan O'Brien because what I was asking about the imports I was asking you about are mainly the things that we're used to consuming in our homes, the things that we buy retail stores. But what about components and ingredients for things that are manufactured here in Ireland for subsequent resale abroad?
Again, this is something hardly ever gets any focus. A quarter of all of the nuts, the bolts, the things that companies put into their own products come directly from the UK. Again, more sourced from the continent going through the UK. So many companies, if they don't have enough stockpile of the nuts and bolts and the various things they use in their own production processes, could find they have to shut down production runs, they just can't make their product, and that could be another way where the economy could be badly hit by a no deal.
I want to bring in Professor Anthony Staines, the Chair of Health Systems at the School of Nursing and Human Sciences in Dublin City University, because, Anthony, I was hearing from various doctors I was talking to over the weekend concerns that already that there is difficulty in accessing certain medicines and that this could get worse after the 31st of October. Do you have similar concerns?
I do, but there's two things going on. It's very important to keep them separate in your head. One is there's a Europe-wide challenge to the medicine supply, and there's a bunch of reasons for this, but it comes down to over-concentration of supply, very long supply chains, which often go back to single factories in the Far East. And there have been a number of cases where those factories have gone out of operation for various reasons and led to shortages. And this affects all across Europe and has nothing to do with Brexit. The second piece is that, yes, we import a lot of our medicines from Britain and we import more of our medicines through Britain, so very similar to other sectors. There has been an extraordinary amount of work over the last 2 years by the industry, by HSE, by HIPRA and the Department of Health to sort out supply chains for drugs so that the drugs are approved in the EU, which is what the new rules will require. There are stocks of drugs in Britain and there are stocks of drugs here. Now, for a variety of reasons, there are always stocks of drugs here. It's because of where we are in a supply chain. The stocks in Britain have been rising, which has contributed to the shortage of some drugs. Britain, the last time I looked, had about €1 billion of pharmaceuticals stockpiled, which is a sizable chunk of their total market. And that number is just going up.
But
it's made life very complicated for everybody.
Anthony, I know we make a lot of medicines here, not all of the medicines that we need, so presumably we'd be able to access those. Would it be relatively easy to actually get the rest of what we need coming in from sea, from Europe, bypassing the land bridge in Britain?
It'll be easier than for some other products because most medicines are very lightweight, high value. The problem will arise with a few particular medications which have relatively short lifespans or require complicated shipping. I think we can overcome it. Almost all the insulin in Europe, for example, is made in Denmark. So it comes to us through the UK at the moment. That's changing. That's shifting. There are pharmaceuticals, radiopharmaceuticals, which are used for nuclear medicine, are made in the Netherlands and come to us through the UK. And again, that's shifting. So I think the message is that everything that can be done to keep the supply flowing is being done. It's not going to be easy, but it's not easy right now before Brexit. And it'll be a bit harder after Brexit. But the people I've spoken to in the industry seem optimistic that they can supply the base ingredients. Maybe not the exact tablet you take, but another tablet with the same drug in its stead.
Thank you very much, Professor Anthony Staines, for joining us. Katie Dunn, today you're from the British Irish Chamber of Commerce, but IBEC, the Irish Business and Employers Confederation, today started predicting a slowdown in the Irish economy this year and next, and an even greater slowdown in the event of a no-deal Brexit. Is this impacting already, as you see it, in consumer confidence and in investment decisions by businesses?
I think we've seen a slowdown in business investment as a result of Brexit, particularly in the UK, where figures have been declining steadily since around the start of 2018. And it's because businesses aren't willing to make big capital investments in their own business if they don't know what the future is going to hold for them. So a lot of business, and it's to do with the longer term preparation. You have some firms in the highly regulated sectors or larger businesses that are used to trading internationally that are fairly well advanced in their no-deal Brexit planning. They have the various measures in place. Pharmaceutical, financial services would be two key sectors where that's happened because the regulators have required them. For smaller to medium firms where they are dependent on the UK for a significant portion of their value, and they've no real clear of what the certain terms are, but they don't have the necessary resources to actually spend it in preparations for something that they don't want to come into play and they hope won't come into play. So we've seen that kind of step back on regular business investment as well as then the issues around Brexit planning as well. So it's been a very difficult few years for businesses.
Dan O'Brien, I'm going to finish with you. You had a very interesting piece in the Sunday Independent yesterday in which you said you would not set aside your critical faculties to don the green jersey, to do what some people regard as your patriotic duty, to talk up Ireland's ability to deal with Brexit and to be uncritically supportive of the backstop. I give you that introduction mainly because of a question that's come in from a listener, and I'm sure you'll take this in the spirit in which it is asked. Is Dan O'Brien a British agent for Brexit?
Yeah, collaborators, this sort of language has come up in the UK. As you know, Matt, from November of 2017, when the backstop came on the table, I highlighted that it came with costs and risks, and those costs and risks unfortunately have materialised. I highlighted those because I think it's my duty to let people know how serious this could be. That's what I've done since November 2017. What I'll continue to do.
Indeed, Dan, I mean, it is the case that you did sort of highlight the possibility that the very thing the backstop was designed to prevent, the restoration of the hard border, has actually brought it closer to actually happening. But isn't there a couple of issues here? Now, one, the backstop was negotiated and agreed between the European Union and Britain. And in the first case, the idea was to have the backstop for Northern Ireland only. And it was only because the British government didn't want a border down the Irish Sea that it was extended to all of Britain. Wasn't that actually the real issue? And you can hardly blame the Irish government for doing in all good faith with the European Union a deal with Britain, which was to our benefit.
I don't want to get into a kind of blame game here. This is an analysis, okay? My analysis was that the British would ultimately never swallow the backstop because it is quite a dramatic gesture. It has constitutional implications for the UK, and ultimately it wouldn't be swallowed. Theresa May was a disastrous prime minister. She was disastrous in terms of managing her own party, in terms of negotiating with the EU. She cut a deal that she couldn't sell. It was never ratified by the UK Parliament. So I don't mean to get into a blame game. I simply want to focus on the analysis of what could happen and what has happened. And in my view, putting the backstop on the table was never going to fly. And I don't want to, you know, disparage the government or anyone involved in this, that they were doing it not for the best reasons, but simply my analytical view was that it wasn't going to work and it risked bringing about that which it was designed to prevent.
Thank you very much, Dan O'Brien from the Institute of International and European Affairs, Katie Dawn from the British-Irish Chamber of Commerce, and we also heard Professor Anthony Staines.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.